produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 423. What did they do next? Part 11A, Jeff Downes.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 423 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a little bit. Please do get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, the whole world has been preoccupied with COVID-19, which is entirely understandable. Mark and I discuss the situation in relation to Yes later on in this episode, but maybe as a bit of light relief, we start by thinking about what Jeff Downes did next after leaving Yes following the drama tour. On the YMP Facebook page this week, Dave Watkinson is very excited about his first ever record as a producer. John Anderson and the Warriors, the Lost Demos EP, is finally here after a huge amount of work. Dave will be coming onto the show to tell us all about it very soon. Preston Frazier has been reading Peter Banks' autobiography, Beyond and Before, and some wonderful footage of Yes playing in Paris in 1970 has emerged and has been shared widely. The band plays Dear Father, and I'm not sure I've seen this one before. It's hard rocking stuff, particularly showing off Kay and Banks' contributions, and also Squire not using his Rickenbacker but rather a Fender Telecaster bass, as noted by Tony Jefferson. Mark added a link to the latest progressive alternative show from Adrian Bell, who you may or may not recall has a ridiculously large collection of Yes singles. He played a song from Mark's new album, which was very much appreciated. In our regular update from Preston's epic Yes Review series, this week we reach We Agree from Magnification, which is another enjoyable deep cut, according to our reviewer. And Yes Official announced, and Billy Sherwood reacted to, the cancellation of the Yes North American mini tour and the cruise to the edge. In common with many other events around the globe, I understand that the whole cruise to the edge has now been postponed. In a rather more positive move, Miguel Falcao posted the following message. Longtime internet Yes friend Stephen Sullivan of Forgotten Yesterdays has suggested to me a very nice idea, to make a collaboration video among all of us, playing The Fish. After some thought, I began to imagine, can you, a long version of The Fish, expanded from the album one, in which you can play separately one or more of the parts, even if you play other instruments, or improvise along. It would basically be played along a backing track I would provide. Each one would then make a video with your performances, and I would compile everything for a final Mega Fish ensemble. That could be actually Play for Chris 6. What do you think of the idea? Would you be willing to join it? Please do let me know your thoughts. Thank you. Well, I think it's a fantastic idea, but crikey, I better put in some practice. In the visitor posts, Jeffrey Mason added Opus No. 2 by John Anderson, which has just appeared on his official YouTube channel. I've not listened to it in full, but the visuals are fabulous, and if you like immersive ambient music, this is definitely for you. Doug Curran posted two Peter Banks album covers in his tribute on the 7th anniversary of the Yes founder's death. Ken Fuller saw Trevor Horn in Florida, and he tells me that Ono was played with Horn at the front. This was a Dire Straits Legacy Band concert with Horn on bass guitar. Brian Sullivan spotted a great acoustic cover of Changes from 90125 by three young musicians, and over on Twitter there was the usual deluge covering press cuttings, painted rocks, and inevitably, coronavirus. So, as always, many thanks to everyone who got in touch in any way this week, including the commenters on the show notes for last week, Jamie, John Thompson, and Michael Handahan.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulrine and Mark Anthony Kay.
Here we are back again. I'm with Mark. Hello, Mark.
Greetings, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. What's the weather like in Canada this week?
It is very nice and mild amongst the people here. We're very happy that snow has melted and it's springtime.
That's good. Although it's not good for the spread of the coronavirus, which we'll be talking about a lot in a few minutes' time. But first, before that, this is the first week of our next part of our discussion about what they did after leaving Yes, and this time it's Jeff Downes. So if you were listening last week, you will have heard that I asked Jeff on Twitter what he worked on as soon as he left Yes and before he got to Asia. And so we're definitely right about this, because if Jeff's wrong, then everybody's wrong, I suppose. Anyway, so he said it was definitely the second Buggles album. So before we go on to talk about a little bit about that, what was your experience at the time? You obviously knew in Canada about Video Killed the Radio Star, because who didn't know about Video Killed the Radio Star in the world, you know? But what else did you know about the Buggles? Did you then start following them? Did they have follow-up hits and success in Canada?
My introduction to the Buggles was, as you said, through, you know, the usual means, radio and, television and stuff like that. But mainly it was also because of my sister, who I brought up numerous times on this show, older sister, Jane, who was, she was usually my gateway, my gatekeeper to all these songs, right, and music, you know. But she listened religiously to the first record.
Yeah.
And then she didn't really follow up with the next album, Adventures in Modern Recording. So I never really got onto this record until many, many, many years later.
Yeah, it's interesting, because clearly the first single was a global number one hit, Video Killed the Radio Star, and the album did well as well. But as usual with these things, the follow-up album seems to have been very much more difficult to produce. And yeah, absolutely fascinating. I obviously knew Video Killed the Radio Star, and I knew a lot of the other projects that Trevor Horn went on to then. He produced ABC, the band, pop band, and Dollar that we've talked about before, and on to Frankie Goes to Hollywood and The Producers, he did that, and Art of Noise and all those sorts of things I knew about. But this second Buggles album, no, didn't hit my radar at all. And it's, so even though Jeff Downes worked on it as the first thing he did after Yes, he didn't actually finish working on it at all. So I've got this little bit here from, I think it's from Wikipedia or somewhere. So it says, in early 1981, following the disbanding of Yes, Downes and Horn reconvened at Psalm East Studios to record the Buggles' second studio album, Adventures in Modern Recording, which is incidentally one of my favourite ever titles for an album. I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. However, Downes left the group on the day the recording of the album was meant to begin, to help form Asia with Howe, citing musical differences. That's a great expression. So he was still involved in the project. He has writing and production credits on three tracks from Adventures, Vermilion Sands, I Am a Camera, which we'll come back to in a minute, and Lenny, where he also handled the drum programming, as well as being the keyboardist on a song he didn't co-write with Horn called Beatnik. So, although the band, the Buggles, is always known as the two of them, Horn and Downes, in fact, he didn't have a lot to do with the recording of this second album. So is that something you knew about?
No, I didn't know that at all, actually, until I started, looking into this stuff more properly, thanks to, the podcast and stuff like that. I mean, once I started getting involved with this, my researching was going much more deeper, especially with stuff like this.
Yeah.
Because, with Trevor's involvement with, Yes later on with Fly From Here, and my interest became renewed with those things.
Yeah, absolutely. So other people then got involved. He had to get lots of other people involved, clearly, because his main collaborator, Jeff Downes, had gone. And Gary Langan, who we talked about very recently on the show, amazing recording engineer, producer, etc., was involved with it, and he was involved with 90125 with Trevor Horn later. And Anne Dudley, again, that we've talked about as well, or later form the Art of Noise with Trevor Horn. And there's a guy, Lewis, Jardin, how do you pronounce his name? I don't know. Also on it. But the most interesting addition to this record is Yes bassist Chris Squire.
Yes.
Who was brought on board not to provide bass, because Trevor Horn played all the bass on this, but to provide sound effects for the title track. Now, having not listened to the album at all yet, that's next week's job, I have no idea what sound effects might be. Any ideas?
I don't really have a clue either. I mean, what I'm thinking, knowing Trevor Horn, is it must be some sort of, you know, something with the voice, and maybe it was put through some sort of processor or pitch shifter and it made into some sort of odd sound effect. I mean, because if you're not going to get Chris Squire to do anything on bass, the next likely thing to do is use his voice somehow.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure that's right. So Horn was angry that Island Records apparently had renegotiated publishing terms for Downes to join Asia, but didn't for Horn. So he was pretty upset. And he felt he had sort of reached the end of his career. He didn't know what to do next. And then, of course, we know that his wife got him involved with the production side. So this Buggles record was really, at the time, the last time that he was a front man and was trying to be a pop star, I think. So it makes it a very interesting end of that aspect of his career, I suppose. So there are certain links, of course, between this album and Yes. We've got I Am a Camera, credited to Downes and Horn, which is a version of Into the Lens from the Drama record. And also, when it was re-released and expanded in 2010, I think, on CD, we had both We Can Fly From Here, parts 1 and 2, and Riding a Tide, which apparently turned into Riding a Tiger, both of those on Fly From Here in 2011. I'm not absolutely convinced that that's the case, that Riding a Tide thing, but maybe it is, maybe it is. We'll see. So certainly there are these writing credits for Downes and Horn on this record, but the 2010 CD re-release, so I Am a Camera, the 12-inch version, We Can Fly From Here Part 1, as I say, We Can Fly From Here Part 2, Walking on Glass, On TV, Dion, Blue Nylon, etc. But also, I noticed, as I'm sure you did as well, as you looked into it, a certain song called Videotech. Now, the Videotech was the big hit for Dollar. So yes, clearly he had done a version, a Buggles version of Videotech before he then took that over to the Buggles, Trevor Horn. So absolutely fascinating. I must get myself a copy of that expanded version, but that's not on this album itself. And one of the main instruments that Trevor Horn is credited with using quite a bit on this album, and it was a very new instrument, and he was one of the pioneers of it, was, of course, the Fairlight synthesizer. Now, I remember that back in 1980, 1981, I was absolutely fascinated with this concept of a sampling synthesizer. Is it something that you were aware of at the time?
Back at the time, I had a little knowledge of it, but later on, I got very much fascinated into it because I got into this period of time where I was into Peter Gabriel quite a bit. And they had a fantastic documentary on the making of Peter Gabriel 3, the Belt record. And they showed Mr. Gabriel with the Fairlight, which he was on and on talking about in his documentary, how fascinating it was. And it showed him and a few other people going to a junkyard with a microphone and a recorder smashing pipes and TV lenses and stuff. And then they would go back and load this into the Fairlight, and he would show you, like, watch this. You go, and you do all these weird things with the sounds that they would record. And he was just like a child in a toy store. He was like, this is fantastic, you know, like as he was going through it. So the Fairlight became something, obviously, that he used quite a bit in his stuff. And obviously, you know, Trevor Horn was probably the master of using this.
Yes, indeed. And I think I've mentioned before that I believe that I've heard Jeff Downes saying that he was one of the first people to ever use the Fairlight synthesizer live. And the proof of that, and I checked it today, actually, just so that I wouldn't make a mistake on this, is that in Jeremy North's photograph that he sent me many years ago now, which is, yes, in concert in 1980, you can very clearly see the Fairlight synthesizer. It says on the front of it, Fairlight CMI, and the old CRT, the old cathode ray monitor at the back, which is a sort of green screen monitor. I've mentioned it before. So yes, both of the Buggles, Downs and Horn, absolutely key to the use of this. And something else, another comment I read online this week while preparing for this, was that it was a tortuous process to try and record this album, because Trevor Horn, in a proper studio, just couldn't get the same feel to the songs as the demo versions. Now, how many times have we heard that? Demo versions have turned up on Yes records, haven't they, in the past?
Yes, demo-itis, it's called. Very, very popular amongst musicians and bands. It's happened to me numerous times as well, where you go in with your band, or even if it's just you and a couple of people just in a basic writing stage, you know, you fire up your 4-track machine or your 8-track ADAT like I did back in the day, and you would write your song, and you know, you'd be happy with it, and then you go and record a proper version of it, and for whatever reason, you'd always listen back to it and go, this just doesn't have the same feel. It doesn't have the same vibe. Or you know, you did a guitar solo on it, yeah, and then you just can't recreate it the same way, because you know, that's the thing that people say, that sometimes the spur of the moment is the time to record stuff, because you're motivated, you're inspired, and then once you have the song and you've lived with it for such a long time and you have to recreate it, it's hard to get that inspiration back.
So he found it really difficult, it seems. And he also said that this album was supposed to be a lot more left field than The Age of Plastic, the first one, from which the single came, of course, Video Killed. And yes, one of the other problems that Horn says he had with this record when it was finished was that he really couldn't hear a single. And, you know, over the years, he has been Mr. Hitmaker, hasn't he, Trevor Horn? So if he can't hear a single on it, I imagine there isn't a single. Now, that didn't stop them releasing singles from it, of course, but it's clearly he wasn't happy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you said, they didn't not at least attempt to try to make a single. I mean, there's 5 of them that's credited. I Am a Camera in 81, October, Modern Adventures in Modern Recording, January 82, on TV in 82, Lenny in 82, and Beatnik, which is the 5th one. So they definitely tried.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. They definitely tried to make a hit single, but you know, like that's got to tell you something. If the man who has been responsible for so many, you know, hit singles says there's just not a hit single here, wouldn't you trust him and say, yeah, you know what, maybe we shouldn't approach it as a hit singles record, maybe approach it as like an artistic album, you know?
Yeah. I don't think the record company wanted to do that, though, because clearly they wanted another worldwide hit like Video Killed the Radio Star. But that's clearly it's turned out to be a once in a lifetime, really, from this version of the band anyway. So absolutely fascinating stuff. Now, so it's left field. It's well known for being electronic, using the Fairlight synthesizer, lots of samples, lots of effects. So I'm really looking forward to listening to that this week, and we will report back next week on it. So if you listening have any comments on this album, if you remember it, if you still have it, still like it, then let us know on the show notes for this episode. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
So Mark is still with me for our Two Pence. Hello again, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin.
All right then. So it's a bit of a tumultuous week for Yes and for the whole world, actually. But we had the news this week that Yes have unfortunately cancelled their mini tour and their appearance on Cruise to the Edge. For the first time, of course, it's their own cruise, so very, very significant what they've done here. So our Two Pence statement that we're going to discuss is, yes, we're correct to cancel the mini tour and their participation in Cruise to the Edge. So before we get on to talk about this specifically, in Canada, what is the situation on coronavirus like?
Well, it's actually interesting that you asked that, because before we started doing this, I had just finished coming out of my living room and watching the latest news, and they did a latest update on the situation. And the situation is that we have about 100 cases in Canada alone, and half of them are here in my province of Ontario. In a country that has, like, you know, 26 or I think way more than that, maybe like say 40 million people, that's really a drop in the bucket if you think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're being extra cautious here, I'm finding, and people are being very, you know, I wouldn't say overly cautious, but, you know, lots of things are sold out. You know, hand sanitizers and all that are like completely sold out in every drugstore and stuff like that. So it's, we have it here, but it's not anywhere near as bad as other countries.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, you're right. Other countries, Italy seems to be the worst hit, and they've closed all shops apart from pharmacies and food shops, and all schools are closed, and all big gatherings have been cancelled, and sporting events and so on, nothing happening. Everybody's locked down in Italy. And I've just heard, was it yesterday, that Ireland have closed all the schools, all the childcare and all the universities are shut in Ireland. Here we are getting, I think tomorrow, when this episode goes out, I think there will be more sort of draconian measures introduced. They haven't had many yet in the UK, but the government has come out saying that it's got billions of pounds for NHS to make sure it keeps going. And I think we will have some more restrictions quite soon. And of course, cruise ships surely are the worst place. I mean, you hear about people catching all sorts of things on cruise ships, including cruise to the edge in the past. So coronavirus now, it's got to be the worst place to be, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was surprised that it took this long, frankly, for them to cancel. And I mean, I know I'm going to hear boo and hisses from people who are, like, you know, booked to go on the cruise to the edge. And I apologize for that. But knowing full well how these things go, not because I've been on many cruises, but because I also participate in the KISS FAQ podcast. One of the things that KISS does on a yearly basis, and they're on like their 10th version of this, is the KISS cruise that happens. And my co-host, Julian, has been on a couple of these, and every time he's come off it, he's always been hit with some sort of, you know, cruise flu, whether it's some kind of stomach ailment or something. He's always gotten ill off it, and so have a lot of other people that we know. So even without this corona thing, cruises don't seem to be the very best places to go if you're, you know, hoping to get out of there healthy.
Yes, indeed. I think in the past, our friend John Kirkman has said how he's felt rather under the weather after coming back. But the whole point, isn't it, about coronavirus and this sort of pandemic is that for most of us who are healthy or young, we're fine. And it doesn't really matter. We just get coronavirus and we have a cold or a cough or whatever it is. But there'll be plenty of people, including members of bands, for Cruise to the Edge, who are in the highest risk categories. And if you think about someone like Alan White, he really, really can't afford to risk that. He's been so unwell. And, you know, Steve, the whole point I'm making here is not that these people are vulnerable. Well, actually, because of their age, they are vulnerable. It's the older people, it's the people who have underlying health conditions and problems. I'm not saying that Steve has at all, but certainly there'd be plenty of people going to cruise on that ship who are definitely in the highest risk category.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's not an insult to anybody. The fact of the matter is we're all going to get older one day. And unfortunately, right now, while this is happening, you know, Alan White is in his 70s. Steve Howe, you know, Jeff Downes is not exactly, you know, he's not in his 40s. He's getting up there as well, right?
Yep.
So, you know, besides John Davison and Billy Sherwood, I mean, more than half of Yes would be susceptible to something serious if something happened on the cruise. So it made perfect sense to say, you know what, we're just not going to take a chance on this because, you know, these guys regularly have meet and greets for these things. So that's, you know, right there, you're enclosing yourself with a bunch of people in a smaller space, which is not good. But besides the ship itself, I mean, there's no escape once you're in the middle of the ocean. No, you know what I mean? No. You can't get away from people, right? So It's a smart thing, I think. I mean, and every band, I mean, just for people who are listening who may not be up to date on some of the other things, but I follow a lot of this now because of a lot of people that I know in other bands. And it's a serious situation here. I mean, lots of bands that I follow, like Sons of Apollo and Kiss and these other bands, they've been canceling things. Kiss canceled all their meet and greets. There's rumor now that their three-year-long tour that they're doing might actually be postponed or even canceled because of this now.
And
people that I know that are not even in big bands but are full-time musicians, they're having a hard time. I've been reading lots of posts on Facebook where people are saying that, you know, people are overreacting, some people think, and this is affecting people's bottom lines. You know, one guy said he might not even be able to pay his electricity bill because nobody's going to shows and everything's getting canceled.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Oliver Wakeman and Oliver Day, which I announced, was it last week or the week before, who cancelled their Touchstone 2020, and it seems like it was a very good idea. Now, in fact, I think the actual final reason why it's been cancelled, this mini tour and the cruise to the edge for Yes, is because they couldn't get insurance. And that's a very real concern, isn't it, as well? Because you can't put on something like a concert series or whatever if you can't get the insurance, because that's just far too much of a risk to take.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's an absolute must that you must have. And of course, right now, the insurance companies are probably right now, unless, you know, there's some very stringent things like, you know, that people are going to abide by. I don't think they're going to give you any kind of insurance right now with this situation. I mean, how can you really assure an insurance company that, don't worry, you're not going to have to pay out anything? You know, sure, there's going to be several thousand of us in a very enclosed space, but, you know, don't worry, I don't think anybody will get sick, wink wink.
Yes, it's just not going to happen, is it?
Yeah.
So the UK and European tour, however, I haven't heard yet at the time of recording this on Thursday before it's released on Friday. I haven't heard that's been cancelled. So at the moment, we're keeping our fingers crossed for that. And these viruses tend to have a sort of peak period, don't they? And I think in the UK and Europe, the peak period is now and for the next few weeks. And then my medical friends tell me that it sort of calms down and sort of abates. But so, you know, fingers crossed that the worst of the virus is over and any restrictions that have been put in place are removed, so that they have the chance to play Relayer in its entirety. But it's never going to be certain. And I know that the Touchstone, Oliver Wakeman said that that concert they're going to try and reschedule later in the year. But it seems a bit unlucky, doesn't it? And it seems, will we ever actually hear Relayer live?
Well, I mean, let's try to put a positive spin on it. Like you said, these things will all gradually get to its resolving point. Now, keep in mind, of course, that it'll resolve pending that people are smart. And I'm looking at you people out there with a keen eye, saying, please, please, please be smart about this. Because if you don't feel good, don't go out and start hanging around with people and spreading it. If we keep this contained, you know, if you don't feel good, you know, stay home a couple of days. This is the best time, actually, if you think about it, to actually stay home from work. You have a perfectly feasible reason to call your job and say, listen, I'm not feeling too hot. I need to stay home a couple of days. Believe me, they'll believe you now, you know. So stay home, get rid of it. And then we won't spread it any further. And if people actually do that, then the resolving of this may happen sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we didn't have, you know, advanced things like the ability to fly across the world, then this wouldn't have spread in the way that it has. But that's not realistic. It's going to spread. But as you say, all the precautions that we can personally take, that's got to be good news. What a very unusual episode of the Yes Music Podcast this is, giving out health advice and that kind of thing. But yes, I think we both agree that they were right to cancel it. There isn't really anything else they could have done. It's such a shame for those people looking forward to that. And, you know, even Billy Sherwood came out saying he was really, really upset that he couldn't go and play this at the moment. But as I say, fingers crossed, it will have sorted itself out enough that they don't have to cancel the whole of the UK and European tour. All right, so what do you think about this? Leave your comments on the show notes for this week. If you agree that they should have cancelled, if you don't agree that they shouldn't have cancelled, or what other problems have you had in terms of bands and events? Let us know on the show notes. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Just before we go, here's the patron update, or half of it anyway. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And half of the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenis, Dave Owen, David Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian N.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. Continued thanks, of course, to Robert and David. Thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them in helping to keep the lights going at YMP Towers here and supporting the show financially, then please do go over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast for all the details. So that's just about all the time we have this week. As I always say, thanks so much for listening once again. I do mean it. We'll be back next week, I do hope, but in the meantime, please do get involved yourself with the show on Instagram, on Facebook, or on Twitter. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.